This podcast is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network, and it's also proud to be from Texas. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Oh boy, you are pilgrims in an unholy land.
Don't say that! Never say that! Goonies never say die!
Great warrior!
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
So who talks first? You talk first? I talk first?
This is the 2v2 podcast. Daddy, Dave, and Steve are awesome!
Load it down.
Oh, okay.
So there's like a storytelling song, like, you know, just kind of a bluesy country song.
Yeah. Yeah, those are your new headphones there.
Oh, sweet. No more black ears.
Huh?
My ears aren't going to be black anymore.
Yeah, I know, right? Sorry, I just hit start on recording right in the middle of your story that you're telling
me. Oh, it's not a very interesting story.
That's anyhow, okay.
The only redeeming quality thing about going to the whole thing was I got to listen to him play.
And yeah.
He did Waylon.
Oh, wow.
He did, You Throw a Rock. And anybody that I love.
Yeah.
He did Ryan Adams. He did, like I said, Skynyrd.
Heck yeah, dude.
He did some, just a ton of stuff.
Hey, look at that. Oh, I can hear you.
I can hear me.
It helps if the headphones amp is plugged in.
He recreated, like a lot of times he'd start playing a song, and he's a master guitarist. Yeah. He teaches guitar lessons and stuff like that too.
Why don't you get up on that mic a little bit more?
Okay.
There we go.
I didn't know you were going to record this. I was just telling you.
Oh, that's okay.
But anyhow, anybody that is interested, go look up Jarrod, J-E-R-R-O-D, Flushe, F-L-U-S-C-H-E.
Yeah.
I think this guy's a talented young guy. He's in his 20s, and I think he's not in a band right now. That's why he took this gig.
Okay.
And
so it was just him and his, like, guitar, huh?
Him and his guitar and another guy with two dueling acoustic guitars.
Okay.
And it's like...
How is his voice doing Waylon?
Good.
Waylon's...
No, the guy, he's good.
Oh, okay.
Very good. Awesome. I mean, I don't know the guy anything. He doesn't know me. I don't even know his parents. I just went to school with him.
Oh, okay.
You know, they're not friends. He's not a friend.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, if you like Ray Wiley Hubbard, he played that. He played a version of one of Ray Wiley Hubbard songs that I think kind of...
Did better than
a little bit better. He did his own song. And the thing is, I would have bought... Every song he played, if he'd have recorded all the songs he played, I'd have given $15 right then for a disc.
Really?
That's how good he was.
Yeah.
Just, and see, that's my ideal thing. Take away all the production stuff with electric guitars and that's fine.
Yeah.
There's a time and a place for that. But if you can sit there with an acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
And your voice is live is good enough to carry it, you know. That's what I respect. I'd rather have that than anything.
Oh yeah, that's one. You know, I think that's one of the reasons why, like that might be a popular kind of thing also because, like, you know, I think that's the reason why some of those bands like Alice in Chains and Nirvana, like their unplugged albums did so well, just because like they were able to like kind of strip it down and go to like the bare bones, and then whenever you actually are down to like the bare bones without any effects or anything like that, or big driving, like, you know, like. Overdrive, you know, whatever. I mean, granted, they're obviously using amplification, but, you know, like, whenever you don't have the stacks and stacks of Marshalls and Line 6 and, you know, all sorts of effects pushing everything, then, you know, you strip it down to the bare bones, you actually get to the essence of what.
But that's where the talent shows through.
Oh, yeah.
If you're good and you got nothing to help you.
Yeah.
Or cover up anything. That shows, that's where it shows up.
Oh God. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey everybody. Welcome to 2BT. I am David.
I'm Michael.
Yeah.
So what is up, man?
Dude, I don't know. Like there's a lot of things going on right now.
There's lots I want to ask you about.
Okay.
I don't know if you have an agenda.
I don't really have an agenda. I always have my notes of stuff that, you know, to talk about or whatever, so that way I can kind of go down the checklist
I've got three things in specific, and I'm going to just throw them out there right now.
Okay, and I'll tell you if they're on the notes or not. They probably are.
Number one is you tried Comixology Unlimited on your
on
your Kindle.
Yeah.
Okay, that's one.
Yep.
Number two, you jumped on the Kurt Vonnegut wagon and listened to Slaughterhouse Five.
That is, yep.
And that's a deep conversation we can have.
Yeah, no kidding.
And number three, you lucky SOB got to watch the movie Blaze last night, and I'm itching to go home and force my family to watch it.
Oh, man.
Because it's now available for rental on streaming services.
Yeah, I rented it on Amazon last night, and it was like one of those things where, like, this whole weekend, like, I've had another one of my movie weekends or whatever. Like, Friday night, I watched Annihilation.
Yeah, what'd you think of that?
I really dug it, man.
Wasn't it beautifully made? The story kind of had some issues, but it's just beautifully made.
It is. It's very beautifully made. And like the whole thing, and like I do dig on how they kind of like ended it too, to where it's like they set it up for a continuation, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it's also like set up to where it's set up for a continuation, but it's also like if they were like, well, the movie didn't do that well in the box office, so there's not going to be a sequel or whatever. Like, it would be fine ending it where it ended or whatever.
Well, the funny story about that is from a trilogy of novels based on the first book. I don't think the other two books were even out when the guy that did Alex Gardner that wrote The Beach.
Ex Machina is a great movie.
He wrote the screenplay and, you know, directed this movie.
Yeah.
And he did it he took it, read the book, then he took a step back and rewrote it as if it was kind of like a dream version of what he had read.
Oh, wow.
So it's supposed to stand alone. It could be followed up. It's not going to be, like you said, as a flop.
Yeah.
But that's a little thing about that. But yeah. So you started with Annihilation.
So I just want to say real fast, since you brought up Ex Machina, like Ex Machina, I watched Ex Machina just on like a whim because it was before The Force Awakens came out, and it has Oscar Isaac. It's kind of funny because both these stories are written by the same dude.
Yeah.
And the movies both star, or they both have Oscar Isaac in them.
Yep.
But both movies have got actors from Star Wars movies in them as well.
Yeah. And, Ex Machina has
Domhnall Gleeson.
Yes.
And Oscar Isaac.
Who he is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And basically I watched that movie because I saw it and I saw who was listed in it. And I was like, oh, hey, I don't know anything about these actors. They're going to be in The Force Awakens. I'm going to watch this so that way I can get a little bit of a background about them. Just so that way I could see them and know like what they've done before and like blah, blah, blah. Not that I'm sitting there watching it to judge them or whatever, but it's just like kind of like I went on a run of J.J. Abrams stuff whenever I found out that he was directing The Last Jedi. Like, I'd seen Super 8 before.
Yeah.
And like I could tell from watching Super 8 that this guy obviously is like a fan of like 80s movies. You know, like the Goonies and whatnot and all like this. But not only that, but he was also a Star Wars fan because there's like Star Wars crap littered out throughout the movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was also always the joke of that, like, I guess Star Trek, the new Star Trek reboot had already come out by that time also. Mm-hmm. And like the running joke was that it took a Star Wars fan to make the first good Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say anything about it because I dig the Trek. I dig especially the Next Generation and stuff like that. But the movies have always kind of like at least a little bit kind of fallen flat just a little bit, especially like the first Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
Like that one was pretty. That one's pretty rough, man. And then it's kind of like the Indiana Jones ones, where the Indiana Jones movies, I love them all, but obviously like out of the four that have been made so far, the even number movies are kind of like where like Temple of Doom, like I still dig it. It was one of my favorites as a kid, but like now that I'm older, I watch it and I'm just like, it's really not, it doesn't really hold up to the Last Crusade or the Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know. And then, you know, there's also the, dude, that train is loud. What the heck, dude? I don't know. Anyways, I got sidetracked and I forgot what I was talking about. Yeah, I know. I was probably about to go on a 10-minute diatribe there, and I just completely, totally forgot what I was talking about. Anyways, J.J. Abrams, Oscar Isaac, Domhnall Gleeson, and then, of course, Annihilation, going back to Annihilation, bringing it back to what we were talking about.
Isaac's in that also. Yeah.
Isaac's in that as well, and so is Natalie Portman. So you kind of have, like, sequel trilogy.
Star Wars.
Yeah, mixing prequels. With prequel trilogy and, like, just kind of, like, mixing it all up in the chili pot and hoping you get
something. It is really weird.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I watched Ex Machina the first time, I was like, oh, wait.
Oh, yeah.
These guys, because I watched it after Oscar Isaacs was in Force Awakens.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, both these guys are in Star Wars. What the heck? I didn't even catch it.
That's such a good movie, though, man. Ex Machina. If you haven't seen it, definitely watch it. But dude, I really, really enjoyed that one. And that one was free to watch on Prime whenever I watched it.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, it was great, man. And then, so I watched Annihilation, really dug Annihilation, really just liked the, it's just beautifully shot, like the CGI and everything like that. And it's just like, really cool, especially there towards the end where like the crystal trees next to the lighthouse or whatever, you know.
Beautiful.
Oh yeah. And then like, it's just really, I dug it. Like I can't even like, it's kind of one of those that like, I'm pretty sure I could watch it again. And I feel like I need to watch it. It's kind of like Interstellar. The first time I watched Interstellar,
yeah.
I liked it so much that I wanted to watch Interstellar a second time. But also because, like, I feel like whenever I watched that movie that there was a lot that I missed, you know, especially with Interstellar. Like, Interstellar is like, yeah, it's just like, there's more to the story that I didn't pick up on the first viewing is what I feel. And like, I dug Annihilation enough that I'm going to watch it again just so that way I can kind of pick up a little bit more whatever I missed. Because like, that's what I like about going to the movie theater and watching a movie. Because like, whenever I'm at the movie theater, I'm focused on what I'm doing.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, not only is it like the spectacle of it, watching it on the big screen with the super awesome, sound system. Oh, I've got a pretty good setup here at the house. I don't have a screen as big as the movie theater screen, but like my living room is small and my TV's big and then I've got a good sound system. So I can sit there and just like kind of rock it and have a really good time. But also I'm at home. So there's distractions. You don't have to worry about, oh, well, somebody just text me, blah, blah, blah. You know, at a movie theater, you can't do that. Well, I don't do that. I know a lot of people do.
Oh, but don't do that near me, please.
Yeah, exactly. I will grab your phone and throw it across the room. But yeah.
Do you ever have, I'm going to derail us. This is a little kind of a complaint.
No, it's all right.
You ever got anybody though that I'm not going to name names, but somebody.
Yeah.
My wife, like, if she were to call this person and this person is watching a movie, can't talk right now watching a movie. So my wife is like, got to hang up.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, this same person. will call us right when we're in the middle of a movie.
Yeah.
My wife said, what you doing? Oh, we're watching a movie. Oh, yeah. Well, blah, 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 blah for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like the hypocrisy drives me nuts.
Right.
Come on.
Yeah. No,
we're watching a movie.
Yeah.
Call back.
Yeah, exactly. Like if I call somebody and they're like, hey, I'm doing this, I'll be like, oh, sorry. Like I called Steven on his birthday and my mom and his son were over there, you know, and it's like, oh, cool. Sorry. Didn't mean to bother you guys. Just saying happy birthday. Cause, by the way, happy late birthday to Steven.
Our missing compadre.
I know. All right. His birthday was.
Couple Tuesday? Of days ago.
Yeah. Was it Tuesday or Wednesday? It was the 6th. I think that was Wednesday, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So anyways, happy birthday to Steven. I saw you the day before your birthday and I called you on your birthday. So it's not like saying happy late birthday, but this is being recorded afterwards. So happy late birthday. But you know, I called him on his birthday and he's like, oh, well, mom and John are over. So blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Not going to bother you. I'm going to tell you bye, but happy birthday. And that was it. It was like a 30-second conversation or whatever. But like I'd text him, you know, through Facebook Messenger. I'd posted a thing on his Facebook wall and then like called him for his birthday. And I'd seen him like the 2 days before that also. So it was like, you know, it's not like I had to like go all out, but that's what I like to do on people's birthdays because it's like, it's your day. It's time to make you feel special. Even though my birthday, I really don't give a crap about my birthday.
I don't at all.
Like I've done nothing special for people to celebrate my birthday. So it's like, you know, and it kind of makes me feel odd, whatever. People are like, oh, it's your birthday, let's party. And I'm like, okay, you want to buy me shots and stuff like that? That's fine. You
know, yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
I will say my 33rd birthday, back whenever I was married, Oh, dude, it was bad news.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was bad news. We went out and I was still married. So me and my ex-wife had gone out and met a bunch of my friends at the bar and stuff. And I think I did 11 shots.
Oh, no.
11 shots within 30 minutes. It was bad. Yeah.
That's emergency room kind of drinking right there, isn't it?
That's the part where it's like, thank God I'm as big as what I am because I was able to handle it, but I got hammered and she was driving. Lord. So
like, oh, there you go.
There was no holds barred. That was like, it was like WWE of drinking or something like that. Rumble in the Jungle or
I don't know if you can do
still
that
cage
now.
Match or whatever.
Older, man, that would kill you for a month.
Well, it's like whenever I went to my buddy's birthday party and I had 3 beers, I was completely totally sober by the time I had 4 beers. I was completely totally sober by the time I drove home, but yet I woke up the next morning still hungover.
Yeah.
I can't do that now. Granted, like that was
like
10 years
ago. Hank Jr. saying hangovers hurt more than they used to.
Right. Yeah. Oh, the wise words from our country elders, man. Oh, yeah. So, anyways, watch Annihilation. Me up the blasted wall. I might have to pause and go tell her shut up.
Because the setting is, I pull up to Dave's house. I walk up, and there are 4 cats on his porch.
Oh,
Dave doesn't own a cat.
No, I don't own any cats.
Then there were 3 more running around in the backyard. When I walked in the door, I could see out the window.
Yeah, I have a problem with strays that run around in the area. Like, it's insane. Like, I'll trap them every once in a while and take them and release them and stuff like that or whatnot, but it's to the point now to where it's just absurd. Like, it's not as bad as what it has been in the past. Like, I've had it in the past where I've sat, you know, with the blinds open and counted 14 cats running across, you know, and that's 14 different cats, and that's not even counting the ones that might be in the backyard or whatever. But, you know, at the same time, I've got a big open lot behind my house as well, and I've never had a mouse. So part of them are beneficial, but, like, whenever they start getting too thick like that, I do start trapping them and taking them and releasing them someplace else because, you know, it's, I'm not going to kill them, obviously.
Like, or on a cold winter's night, a nice cat stew.
I thought you were going to say a nice cat bonfire or something.
Oh.
Like that.
No, you don't wait. Okay, never mind. I'm joking. I would never. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah.
Never mind. I'm not going to talk about eating cats.
No, don't do that. But yeah, so I watched Annihilation. I watched Blaze.
Yeah, we talked about this a while back. We had a window of opportunity where we could have seen it in theater. And of course it fell through because time is precious. And
it only played like 1 week or something
that. Yeah, it's a very limited release, I believe.
Yeah. And that, you know, Blaze and, It hit special notes with me.
Okay.
Like.
And I want to hear about this, and don't worry about spoiling because I know the story.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, you can't spoil the story if you already know who he is and familiar with his music and things like that. Like, there's things that it showed in there, like, you know, him writing the song, If I Could Only Fly. And he said that, you know, the one thing that he should have done is change the wording of it from I to we, because it's about him and his wife.
Right. And if you have any inclination to any kind of singer songwriter kind of stuff, you know, country, not country, it doesn't even fit to me, feel country to me. It's just a beautiful song.
It is exactly to me. Like, whenever I try to tell people, like, technically he's labeled as country music.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess if you declared his style of dress, it would be country, you know, walking around with the cowboy hat and the jeans, the Wrangler jeans and stuff.
Facetious at the same time.
Exactly. To me, it's more like even in the movie, it, you know, shows him like picking his name because Blaze is not his God given name or his parent given name or whatever you want to call it, you know, what I think is like Philip or something like that.
Yeah. I'd have to look it up.
You know, so it actually shows him, you know, discussing with his girlfriend at the time and his soon to be wife, you know, his stage name.
Weren't they kind of, I know Towns Van Zandt, they were hippies.
Yeah. Basically they were hippies. Like, it showed there's a big part of the movie actually deals with him and his girlfriend at the time, which turned out to be his wife later, living in the woods with no electricity, no running water, and all like this type of stuff in this house that their buddy was letting them stay in for free. you know, and, they were basically just living, you know, the great hippie lifestyle. She was trying to be an actor. He was trying to be a singer songwriter.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's one of the things where it happened where he was trying to pick a name, and one of the, his name was like blues, blah, 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 or whatever. Blues this, blues that, blues. Like he's more to me in my thought, like he's more of a blues than what he is necessarily a country and Western style singer. Well,
you go back and you look at Townes Van Zandt and Guy Clark, two of my gods.
Yeah.
No, and no, not trying to offend God, but
yeah,
if I could choose my own gods, there are two of them. I do worship what they've created.
And the guy that played Townes Van Zandt, it's such
a I was going to ask you about that too.
This Charlie Sexton.
They,
and he's not even an actor.
They went sad at the knees of blues guys.
Yeah.
That's what they were driven by. They wanted to learn how to finger pick.
Yeah.
Like, that's how Towns learned how to play the way he played. He finger picked.
Yeah.
All five fingers.
Oh, yeah.
And that he'd learned it sitting at the knee of this guy that was like a blues master down the Houston area. And Guy Clark, same thing. But they, you know, they're white guys in Texas and they come out sounding country and they, you know, they lean towards that and that's where they could make some money selling it. And anyhow, but yeah, I wanted to ask about Charlie Sexton.
Yeah.
When the movie came out, it said that a lot of this, every scene he was in, he just stole it.
Yeah.
Cause he's playing Townes Van Zandt.
Yeah. So technically the movie is Charlie Sexton. Or playing Townes Van Zandt and the other guy, and I can't think of his name. And he's played by, I can't think of the guy's name that plays him. Let me pull it up real fast on IMDb. But
You look that up, Blaze Foley's birth name is Michael David Fuller.
Oh, okay. Michael Fuller, then. Yeah. The
AKA the Duct Tape Messiah.
Yeah. Okay. So it's basically the movie is basically told from Townes Van Zandt and Z, and the radio interview with it doesn't ever say the radio station or the DJ's name, but the movie is basically based on that. Like they are talking to this DJ who's interviewing them,
yeah,
and they're basically given the story of Blaze Foley and whatnot or whatever. So it's Charlie Sexton and that plays Townes Van Zandt. And then Josh Hamilton, who plays Z, and Josh Hamilton, like, whenever I saw him, I was like, dude, that guy looks familiar. And then I looked him up and he's been in a lot of stuff. Like, most notable, he was in Alive. The movie about the plane crash in Andes Mountains where the soccer team that crashed in Andes Mountains where they wound up, like, turning to cannibalism to stay alive.
Yeah.
So it's told from that standpoint. Man, the guy that they had played Blaze was, I thought he did a phenomenal job. Like, it's just, like I said, it could just be because, like, I'd never really, like, listened to him until you mentioned him, until we brought it up on the show, you know, and then, like, I got into it and I was like, oh my God, like, this guy, like, his music was phenomenal or whatever, like, and it just, yeah, and like I said, like the movie, like actually touched parts in me that, like, kind of like I got emotional. I'm not gonna lie, like, man, like it hit parts of me that I was just like, what the hell, like.
Yeah, I'm probably gonna tear up then if it actually made you emotional. I'm a sucker for a story that's really that based in
truth and reality.
Truth and reality, yeah.
Well, one part like that got me, and it's like people that are like former musicians and stuff like that, like, will be able to relate with really well, where he's like in, like, he's back from being on the road and he's talking to his wife or whatever. And like, he's kind of like going down the road of alcoholism, and like, he's been going out and getting hammered and like hanging out with Townes Van Zandt and this older black guy that, you know, they kind of tour together and like play music or whatever. And, he's back at the house or whatever. And she comes in and he's like, telling her that he wrote her a song or whatever.
Yeah.
And of course it's like, it's kind of done like, just, I can't remember the name of the song, but he's like, it's kind of done crazy where he's got it written like all over the walls. And he tells her like, hey, I wrote you a song. And she goes, yeah, I can see that or whatever. And then they have like this whole like big like argument. I think I might have it mixed up with a different spot, but anyways, they have this like big argument and like he winds up just bawling, like crying his eyes out to her. And like, he's telling her that like, like I said, like he's telling her, like, man, I'm getting kind of choked up talking about it, because he's telling her that, like, he's being pulled in so many different directions. Like, the way he's reacting is because he's expected to be this one person whenever he wants to be this other person. And it's like, as somebody that had come to quite a few shows of mine, and I always felt guilty, like, whenever you'd show up, because I couldn't really hang out with you all that much. No. Because I was being pulled in many different directions. Like, hey, come over here, do this. Hey, come over here, do this.
Yeah, yeah.
My persona that I presented on stage and my persona in real life were two different people.
Yeah.
You know, in real life, I just wanted to hang out and, like, chill and talk and blah, blah, blah. Whereas my persona, like, on stage was like, hey, let's have fun. We're here to party, blah, blah, blah. Let's drink. Let's do this. Let's be super outgoing. Whereas in essence, in true reality, I'm more of an introvert.
You'd probably be happier sitting in the corner talking about Star Wars and.
Exactly.
But, that's where, like, you're doing an art becomes part of a business.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's kind of like what he was getting at with her and stuff like that. And, like, it hit that core in me to where I was like, oh my God, I completely, totally understand everything this dude is going through. And it's kind of like, I kind of went down the same road myself at one point in time to where it was like, I can honestly sit here and say I came, like, really close to being an alcoholic at one point in time. Cause, like, I was doing the music thing that just all of a sudden abruptly ended. And then I also got laid off from my job, man.
Yeah.
And so it was like, what do? I still got to be this outgoing, good, fun time person, but I don't really have to, but that I thought that I had to, you know.
Felt it was expected of you.
Exactly. And I was also coping with the fact that, like, you know, whenever you do something like that, and I try to tell people, like, whenever I do something like that, the worst pains in my life that I've felt was A, the band breaking up.
Yeah.
B, the night that my ex-wife told me she wanted a divorce and, you know, it was over.
Yeah.
Those are the two, and, you know, other than, like, death, and those
death,
are like,
deaths,
other than deaths and stuff like that, members, like,
yeah,
those are, like, the two worst pains I've ever felt in my life.
Yeah.
You know, I can't tell you how lonely it feels, like, whenever somebody tells her that it's like, I don't want to be with you anymore. Yeah. And then they walk out the door and the door shuts.
Yeah.
Like, dude, that is, like,
no.
Super, like, alone.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's like, sorry, I'm getting, like, deep about myself here.
No. But that's what this movie brought up in you, those memories, and that's real. That's truth.
Oh yeah,
that's truth in life. I mean, yeah, we can go watch a happy-go-lucky movie and get lost. But when a movie can actually makes it, like, personal to you,
God, yeah, dude, like it struck, like, specific chords to where it was like, I wasn't sitting in the living room, like, bawling my eyes out, but it's like, man, I'm rolling a tear and stuff because it's like, I understand your pain.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, yeah, dude, it was rough. God. It was very good. I dug it. Like, I will say there were, like, minor issues to me with, like, the storytelling with the movie, but it was great. It was awesome.
It made up for any flaws.
Exactly. And I'm talking, like, very, very, very minor issues that it's like a lot of people aren't going to notice unless you're not just, like, zoned in paying attention on it, you know, but, like, and like I say, it's one of these that is like, I don't know what's nominated for Academy Awards right now, but if this doesn't get any sort of Academy
recognition nods, for that, yeah,
I'm done with
Ethan Hawke, right?
Oh yeah. Ethan Hawke directed it.
He's originally from Texas. I mean, he didn't grow up here. I don't think Texas.
Yeah.
But he is from here, and he's always had ties to
the
music and the place. You know, I've heard him multiple interviews, and he always references things like that. Good stuff. Yeah. So okay,
and the locations looked
authentic.
Yeah, authentic also. Not like this, you know, that's one thing. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
No.
But, like, that's one thing is, like, the locations, you know, it's supposed to be down around the Austin area, and it looked like
down around the Austin area. And Austin's very unique look.
Yeah, exactly. So, and especially, like, that's what bothers me the most about, like, movies and TV shows and stuff like that. They're like, oh, we're in Texas. Like the Texas Rising TV show that the History Channel did that I was like, hey, this is going to be awesome. The History Channel's doing a TV show about Texas history. This is going to be badass.
It wasn't.
And no, it's horrible. Like they're supposed to be in Victoria, Texas. And it's like Victoria is going to be super flat because it's down there like next to the coast.
Yeah.
But there's like, they're like, we're in Victoria. And it's like desert and mesas and crap like that around. And it's like, come on, dude.
That's what we've talked about this before. It's like, yep.
Yeah.
Everywhere in the West is desert.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Tumbleweeds. And
what about the sea of grass? You know, the plains, the great plains. Yeah. And that's why I love history, but I usually avoid historical movies unless I can, like, it's like a Hostile.
Oh, yeah.
That movie. I watched some previews of it, read a little bit about it. I'm like, I have faith that they're going to be as faithful as they can to this period of time.
Yeah.
Dances with Wolves, you know, go down the list. There are good movies that do this, that will show it right, the right way. And then there are movies that's like, I went to see I can't even remember the name of it, it's about the James brothers and the younger brothers. And this is made back in like the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
I sat down as soon as it started. In the first 5 minutes, I see how they're dressed. And they're wearing the normal, like, cowboy hats.
Yeah.
Wrong.
Yeah.
And then they shoot a gun and blow up a train. And I got up. I stood up and I walked out. I didn't even ask for my money. I'm disgusted with this.
Yeah.
Because this is just... Because, here's my pet peeve.
Yeah.
When you make a movie about a historical thing, I get it if you kind of bend some things for the story little bit.
Indulge a little bit, yeah.
But most people don't read. They don't know history. So when you tell a story, you are teaching somebody
the story of
this, and you're filling their head with a bunch of crap. I don't know. It really annoys me when they don't try at least to be honest to what really happened.
Yeah, I know it is.
Or why it happened.
Yeah, it drives me up the blasted wall, dude. Yeah, it's Young Guns with Billy the Kid and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Still
love that movie.
I do too, man. Like, that's a big chicken.
You see the size of that chicken?
But, you know, Billy the Kid, you know, he was famous for wearing a bolo hat, you know, a bowler.
Yeah.
You know, and just, you know, things like that. Yeah, no, I'm right there with you, man. Like, at least, like, there's
Brushy Bill Roberts was a real person, though.
Oh, yeah.
I'm still not so certain that Billy the Kid didn't not die.
Yeah.
That part, I am like, that's one of those conspiracy theories. Cause of course, Tupac is still alive in Malaysia.
Yeah.
You know, Suge Knight's son just said, oh no, he's about to drop in some new music.
Really?
I know this. And it's like, really?
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother, that's a rabbit hole we can go down about this conspiracy theories about people's deaths. I can see something happening back in the 60s or 50s or even in the 1800s, how you can fake your death.
Oh, God, yeah.
I find it really hard to believe you fake your death now.
Yeah.
But if you got enough money, you probably could.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
Now,
that's one thing that I've never, like, I'm not too versed on Tupac or whatever, so I've never been able to, I've never gone down that rabbit hole, but I do know that there's, like, some pretty hard, I guess, like, pretty hard evidence that says that he could possibly actually still be alive or whatever.
I really don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I'd have to sit and look again, but, I mean, you get shot that many bullets in public, I don't see how you fake it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's one thing, like I said, and it's nothing, ouch, it's nothing against Tupac. Like, I've just never been a big, like, fan of his music either.
Right.
I love Snoop Dogg, though. Do dig myself some Snoop Dogg.
Hey, man. They perform together, so you can appreciate them
both. Oh, God, yeah. California love. Yep. Anyways, and then I also watched this movie, American in Texas.
What's this?
It was another independent movie. Like, of course, Annihilation wasn't independent, but Blaze and An American in Texas.
An American in Texas.
American in Texas. It's on Hulu. And, it's one of those that, like, if you can kind of look past, like, the weird crap that they throw into the story, it's actually really good, but they tried to add so much to the story that they do things in the movie that doesn't make sense.
How'd you find this?
It was just on Hulu, man, and I was just digging through, Hulu. I was trying to find something to watch, man. Like, I was trying to find
you
something.
Start digging.
Yeah. I was just trying to find something to watch on Friday night. And that's like, I found Annihilation. I was like, I'll watch that. But then I saw this American in Texas and it was like independent flick, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, okay.
I used to love independent movies. I like the IFC film channel on whatever provider you have.
Oh yeah.
I used when back when it was an actually independent films that they showed.
Yeah.
That was great. Addictive.
Oh yeah.
You could sit there all weekend long and see awesome movies, and then it, you know, changed.
Yeah. Yeah. It became more corporate and stuff like that. But you know, and that's kind of how like I found Clerks back in the day, because I was a fan of independent films, and a buddy of mine came up to me and was like, "Hey, why don't you watch this?" And you know, and watching Slacker and stuff like that. But it's actually, American in Texas has, Barry Corbin in it. And
right?
You would remember him from Northern Exposure.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He's great.
Yeah.
Quentin Aaron.
Yeah.
I know that guy.
Yeah, dude. It's got quite a few, like,
sorry.
No, you're fine. But like Barry Corbin, his character, he's like the plant, like a plant manager there. Like the story in essence is about a punk rock band in 1990 in Victoria, Texas.
Okay.
A lot of things that people don't understand is like back in the early, like even, I'd say even late 80s to like early 2000s, Texas had a big punk movement. Same thing with like the whole Texas metal, like, you know, like bands like Drowning Pool and things like that that came out in the early 2000s. Like Texas has always been a hotbed of music. Like it's been really good, especially like everybody always claims Austin's the live music capital of the world. But like in the early 2000s, Dallas was king. Dude.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Dallas was like amazing. You had bands coming out left and right from Dallas. But this is kind of like about like, it's not necessarily about the punk scene, but like a punk band. And what pulled me in was the name of the band, because the name of the band was Surgeon General's Warning. So this band, Surgeon General, that we played with way back in the day, the band that we went to El Paso to play with, and that's a story for a whole nother time. I don't know if I've ever told that story on here, but good God almighty, that was like,
I think I've heard personally part of it.
But. Yeah, I'm probably sitting down and told you the entire thing, because like, you know, that's a 13-hour road trip, dude.
Yeah.
That's a 13-hour road trip. But anyways, it's about a punk band in Victoria, Texas, and they just want to get out. They want to move to LA to think, they think that getting in LA will like help promote them and get them to where they want to go with their music.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But then they kind of throw in other things like they did, like it's also kind of about Desert Storm because it's in 1990.
Yeah.
And so like it's them like kind of anti-war. Of course, them being punk rockers, they would totally be anti-war, anti-government and things like that or whatever. But like there's certain things that are shown in the movie that you're like, what? That doesn't even make any sense why that's in there. Like it shows Barry Corbin and his wife getting a letter from the army to say that their son's been killed in action. But like, there was no setup for it whatsoever. Like, except for like the Desert Storm,
like little tiny,
yeah,
little flaws that could have been helped if there'd been a little bit more guidance from somebody else.
And it's kind of one of those things where it's like, I wonder if it was like they just threw that in there as like filler. Like maybe they had more to it and they were constricted to a time frame that they had to edit it down to, like, you know, this can't go over an hour and 45 minutes or something like that. And it could just be because it's an independent flick. So it very well could be something like that. It's like, well, we just don't have the money to shoot more footage or whatever, but we're going to go ahead and throw this in there anyways, because we have, you know, whatever, got to meet this time constraints or whatever.
This sounds familiar to the movie I brought you that I got from Redbox. The Padre.
Yeah.
It's set in Colombia, and it's about a young girl who's trying to get to America to get her, to her sister, younger sister, who basically was sold by a church to some family, white people in Minnesota.
Oh.
And Tim Roth is, on the run. He's a priest, dressed as a priest, at least. And Nick Nolte is a former United States Marshal that is trying to track him.
Okay.
And find him. So the whole premise is good.
Yeah.
The trailers, I mean, the only reason I got it is because the trailers were really awesome.
Yeah.
And it's a decent movie. The performances are really good. But it's like when you're watching the movie and there's these little flaws, like, well, that's weird. Why did they do that? Or why did they make that decision? And then, just some, that's the difference, I think, between a polished Hollywood movie. And they're full of flaws too.
Yeah.
And, you know, and an independent one, you're going to have sometimes the story was good. In the end, it kind of, I mean, it's worth watching. That's why I brought it for you. Cause, you know, it's Nick Nolte and Tim Roth. Come on.
Yeah.
But there's it's missing. It needs a little bit more something to push it over the edge.
Needs some more polish. And that's kind of how an American in Texas is. American in Texas, like I said, there's parts to the story. Like there's a whole, like, love interest with one of the guys and it follows her. And then like, there's like a whole, like, cancer thing with her mom and stuff like that. And it kind of like doesn't really fit the story all that well.
Like it's another movie altogether.
Yeah. It could have been a whole nother movie altogether or whatever. And it's like they had all these ideas for the story and it's like, they probably could have done a really, really good movie. But like I said, with independent movies, there's obviously like money constraints. So it could have just been the fact that that they had more to the story, but they just didn't have the money to shoot the extra footage to tell the proper story that they wanted to tell. But the base story of it is about this punk rock band called Surgeon General's Warning that's in Victoria, Texas, that's wanting to move out to LA. And, you know, they do this whole thing, blah, blah, blah. It's a good story. I enjoyed it. The main story, I enjoyed it. Like I said, there's issues, but like, it's an independent flick. It was still cool. And I really dug it because they didn't give everybody these hokey damn accents where they talk just like this the entire time of the movie. What? You know? Yeah, no, they were talking like you and I, where it was
really?
Like, yeah, it was insane.
Okay. I might check it out.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's on Hulu. So if you have Hulu,
it's free to watch. So yeah. Yeah, because I do the cheap ass Hulu to where it's like, I even have commercials in my Hulu because I want to, you know, I keep telling myself I'm going to upgrade and get the commercials taken out. But, I don't mind. That gives me the time to answer texts and stuff like that because I don't like answering texts in the middle of a show. I'm going to miss some part of the story or whatever. Right.
Can we take a quick pause because I need to make a phone call?
Yeah. Oh, wait, are we going to pause or are we going to keep it rolling?
This is the one I probably shouldn't record.
Okay. And we're back.
Okay. And we're back.
And we're
had
back.
To, had to deal with some real life things.
Oh, yeah.
Not going to talk about that because.
Yeah. But we know. Are, what we are going to talk about.
We are going to talk about.
What we are going to talk about is the last time we had a pause and there was a crisis at Casa Michael.
Toilet troubles.
What happened with the toilet troubles?
I
already know how the story ended, but I feel like we owe our listeners, the two of them that are out there.
Basically, it was just an issue of needing to turn the water off and, you know,
somebody used too much toilet paper.
It just got stopped up and, you know, I wasn't there to say, just turn the water off. Yeah. got a brand new plunger though.
Hey, there you go.
And, sounded like a bigger deal than it really was. I mean, the first, I don't know. When you're growing up and the first time the toilet ever overflows, you've probably had this happen just for whatever reason.
You freak
it's,
out.
It's a freak out at time.
Yeah.
Luckily there was nothing in the toilet.
Yeah. Well, that's
other
good.
Than I guess somebody had gone and thrown a bunch of toilet, or, you know, here's the thing. Okay. I probably shouldn't be telling this.
No, you tell it. Go preach, brother.
Have I brought up the kitty litter incident?
Uh-uh.
Or the earring incident?
No.
That just happened this week. Okay.
Okay.
Delilah is a very special young, smart young girl.
Yeah.
That's trying to, you know, she's learning how the world works.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not ashamed to admit, I mean, it was only a couple of years ago that we actually got her completely toilet trained.
Okay.
She's older.
Yeah.
She has developmental issues.
Yeah.
And every time we make a step forward, it's like a huge load off of our backs. It's like when she was little tiny, we didn't know if she'd even be able to talk. Now she won't stop talking. didn't know if she'd be able to find her way around to take care of things and do things. Now she's like, we'll say, here, go take this and throw this in the trash. Take this, go put it in the sink.
Yeah.
With this intelligence that's developing, she's also getting curious about doing things and she's forming these ideas in her head. Well, she knows that the cats use the litter box.
Yeah.
Because we say, stay away from the litter box. That's where the cats, because that's nasty.
Yeah.
Cats, that's where the cats go poo-poo and pee-pee.
Yeah.
You poo-poo and pee-pee in the potty.
Did she go poo-poo and pee-pee?
No.
Oh, okay.
She goes, I think she realized, because the next day she told me.
Yeah.
Kitty cats need to poo-poo in the potty.
Yeah.
In the potty. So what she does is she goes and finds the litter.
And puts it in the toilet.
And she fills the toilet with litter.
Oh, no.
Now, I don't know if you've been around cat litter, but when it gets wet.
It gets clumpy.
It clumps.
Yeah.
So imagine what would have happened if somebody had not knowingly had gone in there and, or she had reached up and flushed. And then when I say she filled the toilet, the entire toilet bowl was full of.
Yeah.
Cat litter.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I had to literally had to sit there and scoop it out.
Oh my God.
And hope and then like run water down our, cause we have septic lines and.
Well, also like that could get in your tank and fill up your tank too.
Yeah. 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 So she learned a valuable lesson that no.
Yeah.
Let's just let the kitty cats do their business and their thing. And
yeah,
it was horrifying.
Oh my gosh.
It's like, oh my God, what just happened?
Yeah.
And then for some reason, she decided to take, my wife has this nice little, it's a decorative thing. This looks like a tree with birds on it. And it's for like hanging like earrings and jewelry and stuff on little tiny thing.
Yeah.
Well, for some reason, Delilah decided it needed to go in the potty too. So I walk in and she has dropped this thing in there. And I think she realized, oh no, maybe I shouldn't have done that. And she's in the process of going in with her arm. I'm like, no, stop that. And she's like, jumps back. I'm like, no more. You use the toilet for two things and no more putting any other toys. No, don't grab mama's phone and throw it in. Don't do any of these things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Toilets have been a theme for this last month.
Dude. Oh my goodness.
But I love her to death and she learns and she's getting better all the time. But it's those things that just drive you nuts. Because kids, I mean, I have, I guess you would call perfectly normal. I don't like using that, but I've got a niece that would have been considered perfectly normal compared to my developmentally challenged child.
Yeah.
That they lived in a two-story house and she went when she was about 5 years old and you put an entire roll of toilet paper in the toilet and flushed it and flooded the entire upstairs of my sister's house.
Oh my goodness.
So she's normal.
Just a second.
Just finishing up this is going to be the pause episode.
It is going to be the pause episode.
Get interrupted. It's fine. No, I was just finishing up my toilet drama.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to pause right in the middle of you, but. Oh.
That dog is going nuts in there.
Oh, yeah. There's a cat sitting in the middle of the back porch, like sitting there looking at the dog while she's barking. And I know that the cats are doing it because they're like, you can't get to me, and I'm just going to sit here and drive you nuts because that's what cats do. Cats are jerks. Yeah. That's why I don't own a cat, because they're jerks. They are. They like being jerks. They are the jerks of the animal world.
Yeah.
That's fine. I'm sure some dogs are jerks also, but you know, whenever I walk into a room and just about any dog walks up to me, is like, hey, what's going on, dude? And the cat's like, whatever.
Yeah.
That's, you know,
it's kind of like
I'm a dog person.
I told you, or I don't think you were recording when I told you about the eggs at my house.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. In the middle of the night, and the cats know they're not allowed on the kitchen island. They're not allowed on there, you know, spray bottle training, you know, spraying them and they don't get up there, but I know they get up there because they're jerks.
Yeah.
And I've caught them when they think we're like in bed and I'll get up, they'll be over and why there's nothing for them to do up there. We don't have anything we keep out. But this one time last night, we had a carton of eggs that somehow got lost in the fridge and we never used. And I tested them with a water test and we're like, oh, they're going bad. I'm not going to use them.
Yeah.
So I was going to dispose of them, outside, you know, naturally rather than throw them in the garbage or whatever.
Yeah.
And, so they were sitting on the kitchen island. I was going to take care of it today. And little Smeagol, true to his Gollum nature, and I know it was him because he's a jerk. She's a jerk. He had taken that entire carton, just shoved it off, and shattered everything in there.
Yeah.
Cats.
They're jerks. But, I mean, what can you do? Just like, it's already started again.
Yeah.
Less than 5 minutes because I ran
something in front of that window.
Yeah. I need to put something in those cats is what it is. Oh my goodness.
I should have brought Dan Clifton's AR-15 over here for you.
Why bring his? I've got one in my bedroom.
I know. Oh God.
Yeah. I just don't want the ticket. from the city. No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. I wouldn't shoot a cat. I don't want people to think that I would, but I'm not. I wouldn't shoot.
I already admitted about I'd eat one. Yeah. But think about how many people are gonna stop listening tomorrow. I would not eat a cat. I wouldn't shoot a cat. I wouldn't hurt any animal.
I know. That's kind of the same here. The
only thing I've ever done is I've put animals out of their misery. I will admit to doing that.
I've never even done that, man.
It's like, it's one of the hardest. It's really hard.
I bet so.
I had to put my own dog out of his misery once, years and years ago, because I was helpless. Which one? I had this red dog.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever saw it. This was back in like 2000.
Oh, okay.
Late 90s, 2000. And, somebody had shot it.
Oh, wow.
Either shot it or it was really graphic. I'm not going to get into it. The injury was really bad.
Yeah.
I call him Red Dog because he was a stray that we just took in, and I loved him. He was so gentle, so nice, so happy.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, the reason I think it was a gunshot, because I remember waking up and hearing this pop.
Yeah.
And then I didn't think anything of it. I get up and I go out, and my driveway was like a quarter of a mile driveway.
Yeah.
This poor dog had drug himself from the road.
Oh, wow.
To my wooden back porch of this trailer house I lived in, and was laying there in extreme pain.
Yeah.
And there was no way I could move him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To take him to a vet. And I think, I know he was beyond help of a vet.
Yeah.
He was there suffering. And,
dude, that's rough.
I don't even know if I should even leave this in, because it was a nightmare situation.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see any hurt in leaving it in. I mean, you were doing a service. Like, somebody might not agree with it, but then again, I mean, like, what's the difference? You're just going to prolong the pain of an animal while you take it to the vet, so that way they can give it,
I couldn't have got it to the vet.
Yeah.
The situation it was in, I couldn't have done anything.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and man, like, yeah, I don't see any issue leaving it in. If somebody gets upset, then they shouldn't be a listener anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, they couldn't have dealt with it themselves.
Exactly. Yeah. But I'm going to segue to something. So it goes.
So it goes.
So it goes.
And that's the situation. So it goes.
So it goes. Yeah.
That's a part of life.
I should have just said, so it goes, man, instead of saying I'm going to segue, because that was exactly so it goes.
Yeah.
Which is Slaughterhouse Five.
I don't have a tattoo, but I've always thought about, if I'm going to get one, that's probably the one I need.
Yeah, I can set that up for you.
Because I've talked with Paul and Michael about Kurt Vonnegut, and it's been a long time since I read some Vonnegut. And they had that Audible sale recently.
Yeah.
And one of the books I got was that, just because I wanted to dive back into it.
Yeah. And it's always been a book that I've been interested in. Also, I've just never sat down and read it before.
I read this thing like long time ago, and I remember reading it again. It brought back all those same feelings that I got from reading it that first time about how important this thing is I'm reading.
Yeah.
And I don't want to talk, because I've talked about it last time, I think.
Yeah.
I want to hear your reaction to the story of Billy Pilgrim and Kurt Vonnegut, because he's in the book.
Yeah.
He lived through it too.
Yeah.
The Dresden bombing.
Exactly. And it's his telling, of course, you know, the first chapter is basically like,
it's a prologue.
It's a prologue. It's an introduction, basically, where it's like setting up like all the names of the characters. They're all real people, but all the names have been changed. And, even the narrator of the story is kind of like a character in itself, whereas the narrator is supposed to be him. Mm-hmm. But like, it's one of those that like, there's not many books that I look forward to going back to work and listening to.
Yeah.
Nothing really makes me want to go back to work. That book made me want to go back to work and listen to it more. But it's just, you know, I don't even know what I don't really, cause I read that one, and I read Neverwhere by
Neil Gaiman. Yeah.
At the same time. Like, well, I won't say at the same time, but like, I did Slaughterhouse Five.
Yeah.
And of course, it was a short book. It's like 6 hours.
Oh, yeah. It's a quick read.
And immediately after that one, I started Neverwhere by Neil Gaiman, which is a longer book. But like, to sum it up, like, I told this to somebody, it was kind of weird, because I had this like surreal feeling of like, I was like, kind of like living in like a Tim Burton movie almost, mm-hmm. you know, because like the, Neverwhere, like I could see the marquee. I don't know if you've read that
no,
one.
No, I have not.
It's a really good story. It's one of those that it took some time for me to really get into the story. It's very good. It seemed very Alice in Wonderlandish. To where, like, the main character, and I know I'm supposed to be talking about Slaughterhouse-Five right now, and I should get back to Slaughterhouse-Five before I jump into Neverwhere. But just to say what I'm going to say real fast, Neverwhere seemed very Alice in Wonderland-ish to where,
yeah.
The main character, Richard, and I can't remember what the blasted last name of the character was. Anyways, Richard, the main character, kind of like goes down the rabbit hole of London Below or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, anyways, Slaughterhouse-Five, and like I said, like, I did Slaughterhouse-Five and Neverwhere, so I really had this, like, kind of like Tim Burton feeling to my life in the past, like, week and a yeah. half after listening to these two books. Which isn't bad because I love Tim Burton movies, right. but, like, it just was really like, oh, man, like, and like, you know, the saying, so it goes is repeated so many times with Slaughterhouse-Five, but it's so fitting every time that it's used. And it's such a small, simple saying that at the moments in time that it's used, it's like powerful,
very powerful.
Cause it's always,
he'll just,
his wife, Billy Pilgrim's wife, got rear-ended after he had a, you know, went down in a plane crash. And, had a plane crash, had a head injury, and he's in Vermont, and he's in the hospital, and she's there in Vermont staying with him or whatever, and she's going to the hospital, or she's on her way to the hospital because her dad and her husband were in the same plane that went yeah. down. And as she's on her way to the hospital, she gets rear-ended, rips the exhaust system off her car, she flees the wreck, and the CO2 coming up from the exhaust into her car kills her on her way to the hospital.
So it goes. 135,000 people died overnight in Dresden.
So it goes. Oh, dude, yeah.
You know, like sometimes there's like one paragraph, there's like, this person died, so it goes. This person died, so it goes. This yeah. person died, so it goes. And nothing we're doing here is really can share the way Vonnegut used it, because he starts out, it comes early in the book.
Yeah.
And then it just becomes this like a bell ringing.
Yeah.
And it's all ties down to Tremalfador.
Yes. Yes. And the time travel.
Time travel's slipping in time.
Yeah.
And, it's pretty trippy.
It is. It really made me feel like the movie The Jacket. I was going to ask you if you wound up watching that.
I never got a chance to. I had to have it written down.
Okay. It really kind of felt like that movie a little bit. Like, it wouldn't surprise me any at all if they didn't use The Jacket. The storyline basis of The Jacket, they didn't pull from Slaughterhouse-Five as an inspiration, technically. Not necessarily like base The Jacket off of Slaughterhouse-Five, but like just kind of like an inspiration because, you know, he kind of has this vision of the future instead of actual time travel.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas in Slaughterhouse-Five, he's jumping from World War II to in the future to actually at the time of his death, you know, because he becomes some speaker or whatever. And, you know, he gets kidnapped by aliens, and I really liked Tremalfador. I really liked the Tremalfador's, explanation of time in people's
all
lives.
All time is all time. Everything that's happened exists right now.
Right now.
Like you and I talking in an hour, we'll still be back here talking. This is never going away.
Yes.
Time is basically, all of time is trapped in amber, and that's how he kind of slips in time. He yeah. somehow is able to go from being a prisoner of war during World War II to being an optometrist to being on Tremalfador to seeing his own death
to marrying his wife and you know being you know his the 10th anniversary party or something like that and like just kind of like falling into getting married to this girl that he didn't even like in the first place, you know.
Yeah, Billy Pilgrim's not necessarily a likable person.
He's not really. He's just kind of like, you know, it, so much of the character's life just seemed kind of like he lucked into it.
Like, how much of,
and how much of it can you call luck?
Yeah.
He also, you know, he goes to World War II, but he's a priest assistant, so he never does have to fight, but yet he gets caught behind enemy lines, gets captured. He gets sent to Dresden. You know, he's in Dresden, but yet he's also a POW, so he's in the slaughterhouse, and Slaughterhouse 5 is the address.
He just kind of drifts through life.
Exactly. And just kind of like,
and that's what he's drifting back and forth through his life. And
yeah.
You know, I wonder how much of the book, how much Vonnegut was thinking about something, and I don't know if it was or something that was talking about PTSD.
Yeah.
You know, people, like, it's like the guy he went to, his buddy he went to visit in the prologue, and they ended up going on a trip to Dresden after the war.
That book really made me want to go to Dresden.
Dresden was supposed to be one of the most beautiful cities in Europe, period. I think yeah. It was the most beautiful until...
Until the Dresden bombing yeah. or whatever. And that's yeah. one thing, like, you know, I hear about it and I really want to research Dresden now because, you know, I guess it was like Berlin at the start of World War I was maybe all the way up to World War II was like, you know, how we think of like Paris is like
center of culture
beauty, and yeah. fashion and beauty and stuff like that. Berlin was actually that in the early 1900s. You know, in the late 1800s or whatever, where yeah. the fashion and the art and music was coming out of Berlin. Instead of Paris, you know, and it's just, you know, you don't really think about that whenever you think about these things. That's how much a war can change a culture that like it decimated it so much, and decimated is a bad word because Dessa has a 10 and, you know, that was a punishment for Roman soldiers. So yeah, I will say annihilate mm-hmm. how war can annihilate a culture so much that it totally changes them and will move the center of like the culture coming from one place to another or whatever.
Let me ask you a question. Is Slaughterhouse 5 an anti-war book?
Yeah, it seems like it because it doesn't really have a good side to it. You know, it doesn't really paint war in a good light. You know, like his buddy that he gets captured with, that's not really his buddy, but yet the guy dies, so it goes.
But the flip side of that is, and this came to mind when I did a couple of little reading about Vonnegut, and somebody came to me and said, why are you, don't write an anti-war book. What are you doing writing an anti-war book?
Yeah.
Because you're not going to end war with yeah. an anti-war book. And Vonnegut goes, I know. So yeah, I agree with you. It is anti-war. His whole thing, Vonnegut was a veteran of World War II. He came out of it, pretty much, I think, an atheist.
Yeah.
And not thinking that we should be wasting money on warfare. But at the same time, he was a realist.
Yeah.
He's like, he pointed the finger at the absurdity. That's one of the funny things I was trying to relate to my wife about Vonnegut is that it's funny how you can laugh in a book.
Yeah.
That is so heartbreaking.
Oh God. Yeah.
Because he laughed at humanity. He looked at us and like, we're these stupid apes and we're not getting it right.
Yeah.
We're getting it wrong all the time. We're going to screw up. We're going to screw up again. We're going to screw up in 10 years. So it goes.
Yeah. So it
just goes. Sit back and laugh. Try to do the right thing. You do the right thing, Dave. I'll do the right thing. Maybe eventually other people will try to do the right thing, but we're not going to stop evil.
No, God, no.
It's heartbreaking, but at the same time, it's almost calming.
Yeah.
The whole Malfadorian philosophy is almost like, okay, I can breathe.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to change anything. I can only change what's around me right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn. Yeah, no, exactly.
Is that the feeling you got from reading it?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. And like I said, I think that's the reason why it kind of put me in like a Tim Burton.
Yeah.
Like I felt like I was in a Tim Burton movie.
That book, that's one of those books that, you know, I haven't read it in years and years, but I'm glad I did because that's one of those books I can point out that book made me who I am today. It yeah. changed my life.
Oh God. Yeah. Like yeah. I was kind of like already in like, you know, I can honestly say like, I've always kind of like, or at least like the past like 5 years, I've kind of been in like the whole like, well, it happens. That's yeah. one of my famous sayings that my friends have heard me say so often. Well, it happens. Very similar to so it goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's like, what are you going to do? You can't change this. You just have to deal with it. And it's like, I have a very laissez-faire and I don't care attitude to where it's like, yeah. Well, I don't care. You're not, you know, I don't get me wrong. I obviously care about a lot of things.
You care about a lot of things. I know you do, but you're also like,
if you can't change it, why worry about it?
Yeah.
So it goes.
I remember hearing, there was an interview on NPR a couple years ago, and somebody is about language.
Yeah.
And there's this culture, and I'm not going to even guess because I don't remember, but there is a culture, their language, they do not have a way of saying, if this had happened.
Yeah.
Basically, their entire, when they remember something, this happened, then this happened, then this happened. They don't look back with regret at, well, if this had happened, then this would have happened. They don't do that. And it's a mind-blowing thing because we always look back, well, if I just got that raise, or if I'd have not done this, my life would be different. Or if I'd have made the right decision here, this would have happened. Well, this entire culture, they don't, there's just like, they just accept it. So it goes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I'm really happy you read that.
Oh, dude. And
Vonnegut has this way of putting these, I guess you'd call it a philosophy or an outlook. You read Cat's Cradle, he makes up this religion.
Oh, really?
Just the way he writes. And I don't even have to describe his writing.
Yeah.
It's very straightforward. He's not very flowery at all.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. It's very in your face. It's kind of like to where, I've never read any William S. Burroughs, but I guess him and William S. Burroughs and even Hunter S. Thompson were very similar in their writings, where it's like not really sugarcoating anything or whatever.
Yeah.
Like I have read, and in fact, a book you gave me a long time ago, and I'm talking like early 90s, you gave me Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Yes,
that's another one of those books that it's like, good God.
Oh, yeah. That you gave me and told me to read. And it could be because, like, since those writing styles are so similar that, like, I'd pictured Johnny Depp in the book of Slaughterhouse 5 and also James Franco, because James Franco was doing the narration, yeah, you know. Yeah. And it's kind of the same thing with Neverwhere. Like they very have, you know, they're dark. They're dark, but yet they're also enjoyable at the same time. Like, you know, I'm not going to sit there and seek out dark crap all the time or whatever, but like, it was just like, yeah, so it goes, man. Like, I can't get past the so it goes.
Yeah. It's going to be with you for the rest of your life.
Oh, yeah.
It hit me. So when I started out trying to be a writer, like a long time ago when I started doing short stories and stuff, and this is really stupid, but I would actually drop that line every once in a while.
No, that's not stupid. I don't think, at least to me personally, because to me, that's like,
it's an homage
saying like, hey, this is where I draw influences from, is from Vonnegut and things like that. And like I said, I've never read any William S. Burroughs, but like, I kind of feel like, I don't know. Like, obviously these guys were pulling from one another, is from what I understand or whatever. Like, now it's definitely got me to where I want to read more Vonnegut, and I want to read some William S. Burroughs, just so that way I can kind of get attuned to what these guys were, you know, especially William S. Burroughs. He was a homosexual living back in the '50s or whatever.
His life was a trip.
Yeah.
He was related to Robert E. Lee.
Oh shoot. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. He, that's a whole nother discussion. Yeah. His life. He shot, he killed his one wife he had.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
There's a movie. There's a movie with, Kiefer Sutherland.
Oh, plays okay. Him really?
It. It's a decent movie, and I've seen a couple of movies that kind of focus around, because he was with that the Beat generation of Allen Ginsberg and Jack Kerouac and all those guys. They kind of looked up to Burroughs. Burroughs was already a much older guy by the time they came around.
Yeah,
in the '50s, you know, with their writings and stuff in the '60s. But yeah, he was a hoot.
Yeah, yeah,
heroin addict, and you know.
Yeah, I will say that it really made me want to see a movie of Slaughterhouse 5.
There is one that's available for rental, so for streaming and stuff. I watched it back, like I said, in the '90s when I first read the book. It was made in like 72.
Oh, wow.
I can't really remember enough about it.
Yeah.
To say whether it's good or bad, but I want to go back and watch it again because. It's Slaughterhouse 5.
It's kind of funny because like reading the book and then hearing James Franco do the narration of it really made me think like this would be a movie that James Franco would really excel at. I feel like it was just one of those. And it could just be because like he had a very, as he's reading the book, it's so it goes.
Yeah.
You know, he had a very laissez-faire attitude towards even the book or whatever, but it fit. Yeah.
He did an excellent job. Another narrator could have ruined it for you.
Oh yeah. Totally.
So it goes. Yeah. No, that would have, so it goes.
Yeah, so it goes. And like, I also, jumping into Neverwhere, I read Neverwhere and it's Neil Gaiman, as far as I know, does all his, own narration to his books and stuff like that.
Oh, really?
That.
I didn't know that.
Like he does American Gods. Oh, no, he doesn't do American Gods. I don't think. I think it's somebody else that does American Gods.
This is one of the books I did get to put in my.
He does Norse Gods. Norse Gods. Okay. That's a recent book, right? That's his most recent one, which is really good because it's basically just an interpretation of like actual Norse mythology and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I did this Neverwhere and it's an older book. Apparently, like there's like a 6-part miniseries, I think that they did like back in the early '90s. I think it might have been the early '90s, of Neverwhere. Yeah. Publication date, September 1996. But I think it was like maybe early 2000s in or whatever. But, like I said, it really had the main character, and I had to look it up. And I'm so disappointed that I forgot his last name because his last name to me is based off of a famous actor from Star Wars, Peter Mayhew. The character's name is Richard Mayhew. Peter Mayhew played Chewbacca. I can't necessarily say he's a famous actor. He's famous to me.
He's famous.
Yeah. But, the main character, Richard Mayhew, he's just your normal average everyday dude who's got this fiance who kind of like mistreats him. He's a very just basically like, led man, like, as in, like, he doesn't really make decisions. His fiance makes all the decisions for him. Like, she basically, like, picks his clothes, tells him what they're going to do and all, like, this good stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, even with his job, he's not, like, excelling or anything like that, but he's at this company and, you know, he gets told what to do and submissive gets led.
Personality.
Very submissive. Yeah. That's the word I was looking for.
Easy to push around.
Exactly.
He's that person you want to have there if you just.
You're
an A-type personality and need somebody to.
Yeah, you know. Exactly. So, and then he and his fiance are going to meet her boss and supposed to be going to this fancy dinner or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, this girl Dor just kind of appears out of nowhere and she's bloody and blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, his fiance gets pissed off because he's trying to help this girl out and she walks off and he takes her back to his apartment and kind of nurses her back to health. Well, like he does an errand for her. With doing this, he falls through the cracks.
Falls
through the cracks. And that's his tumble down the rabbit hole in essence to where he goes to London below instead of London above. And so it's basically, it made me feel like a cross between an adventure story, like similar to Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
And Alice in Wonderland.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's one of those that I'm really kind of surprised that there hasn't been a movie adaptation done by Tim Burton with Johnny Depp playing the Marquis.
I need to put this on my list of things to add.
Yeah.
Pick up.
It was one of those, like I said, it was really kind of hard to really get started. Like, kind of like, and this is no knock on the Expanse books because some of the Expanse books, they were long starts where they're building up the characters or whatever. But after I really got into the book, I really enjoyed it a lot.
Well, the very first Expanse book was really hard for me to.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I'm going to read this.
Yeah.
But that first chapter is like, it throws you right in it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, wait, what's happening here?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the Expanse books were like that for me to where it's like they're always the first chapter of the new Expanse book that comes out is always building up the new ancillary characters in the book. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I want to get into the meat and I want to know about my heroes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas this book was similar, but of course it's building up your hero because you haven't started it. So it's just, maybe it's just anticipation on my behalf that I'm wanting to get into the story or whatever, but it's setting up the characters, building who he is. And then of course it's all for the big payoff, the climax or whatever towards the end of the book to where, you know, whatnot, which I'm not going to give out anymore because I don't want to spoil it or whatever, but it's just building how submissive he is, you know, because it goes about how he met his fiance in like the Louvre in Paris or whatever and blah, blah, blah. Hmm. But yeah, it's
funny you bring up Gaiman though, because, one of the things I'm about to start reading on my Kindle through the Comixology Unlimited app is the, Sandman series.
Oh yeah.
I've read the first two trades before, and then it's like one of those things I let it slide, and cause I was purchasing them in physical copies. Now I don't have to worry about it. I can just read them with my subscription to the
Unlimited. Oh yeah.
And get back into it, because it's supposed to be like a masterpiece. Everything I've heard is always considered said masterpiece.
Yeah.
Associated
with it. And it's funny that you bring that one up, because my buddy Daniel, who does my tattoo buddy or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
the one that's going to give me my So It Goes tattoo.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he and I, you know, play ESO every night, and he's not a huge Gaiman fan. He's kind of like me with Gaiman. Like, there's been Gaiman books that I really, really, really like. Like, I really enjoyed American Gods, and I really enjoyed Norse Gods, and I've really enjoyed Neverwhere. So far, you know, Gaiman's batting 1,000% with me right now. Like, every book that I've read of his, I've really liked, but I'm not like a Gaiman fanboy to where it's like, oh, well, Gaiman wrote this. I want to go out and get this right now. But he is the same as me, like, and he is doing a Sandman tattoo for a person, and so they brought a I guess it's like an omnibus, a Sandman omnibus to him, and he's kind of the same as me. He's like, he said he started reading it, he's like, he was having trouble getting into it, but he was using it as research to, you know,
for the art
or whatever. And then he really got into it, and he just got completely, totally hooked on it. And he's been like devouring the Sandman omnibus now or whatever. So
isn't that funny? Some things, it's like you start out, it's like, man, I don't know how I feel about this. It's like I can name a number of books like, that I tried to read, like Game of Thrones several times. I bought the paperback back before there was even a whisper of the show, back when I worked at a bookstore. Some person that worked with said, you need to read this. So I got it. Took it home, read the first three pages, put it down. A year or two later, I pick it up, first three pages, put it down. Then finally dove into it. Blood Meridian, I picked it up, read the first few pages, put it down. And then I finally finished it, and it's like, oh my God, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just weird. Weird how things go like that.
So. Oh God, yeah. Yeah, Neverwhere is a definite, like, check that one out, man.
Awesome.
Like, it's, I enjoyed it. I got that off that Audible sale.
Yeah, I've got some hefty books in there. You know, I was looking at, what to listen to next. I'm like, I really want to try one of these other new books, but I'd already started Winter Night before.
My
Butcher. Before I did, I quit it and got into Slaughterhouse-Five, because the night you said you'd finish it, I'm like, I got to listen to this again. Because I wanted to be fresh in my head for our conversation.
Oh yeah.
About it. And I just wanted to read it again.
What'd you think of James Franco's performance as narrator for that?
It was perfect.
Right?
I thought it was spot on. I mean, you know, he captured the voice.
Yeah, definitely.
And I didn't even think, oh, this is James Franco.
No, I thought about it at first whenever I was listening to it at the beginning, but then like as I got into it, he just sounded like the narrator, like he was telling the story. So it goes.
I got this one book. It's called Europe Central. It's about World War II. It's written by a guy named William T. Volman. He won the National Book Award back when it came out.
Okay.
It's like 54 hours long.
Holy crap.
I got another book by him called, The Dying Grass. It's about the Nez Perce, the war against the Nez Perce.
Oh, wow.
Say it. Indians, you know, Chief Joseph and all that. It's like the same length. I'm like, good God, should I start one of those? Because that is some time, man. That's like 10 books.
Yeah, dude. Those are tough, man. They're good usually, but man, those are.
Well, you've done Game of Thrones. How long is one of those?
They're
30 some hours.
Yeah, ages. Those take ages to go through. This is kind of like The Name of the Wind, but I've also done like historical books as well, like Stephen Ambrose. I really like Stephen Ambrose and his historical writings and stuff, where he's done a lot of books over World War II. Like, you know, probably his most famous is Band of Brothers.
Oh yeah.
And I haven't done Band of Brothers. I've done Citizen Soldiers, D-Day, which is all just about, like, it goes from the planning of D-Day to the actual invasion. And I think, like, maybe D plus three or something like that, you know, but it's, like, very intricate about everything. Like, there's even a chapter over comparing, Eisenhower and Rommel, which was crazy similar they were or whatever.
There's another good book about D-Day by he's like one of the top World War II historians.
Yeah.
John Keegan. He's a British historian. I think the name of the book is Six Armies Over Normandy. And I don't know if there's an audio version or not, but it's one to keep an eye out for.
Okay.
Because he really does a really good job of setting it all up.
Another book that I really enjoyed, my favorite Stephen Ambrose book is almost like a biography of a guy who ran for president, was governor of Alabama. He's even mentioned George McGovern. I had to think of the Charlie Daniels song. He's even got a George McGovern sticker on his bumper or something that. You know, he even voted for George McGovern for president or whatever. But, you know, McGovern, he was a very anti-war guy, but yet one of his things that people disliked about him is he was a B-24 pilot in World War II. And so the book is actually, it's kind of like a biography of McGovern, but it's actually about B-24 pilots. It's the Wild Blue. Mm-hmm. Men and boys who flew B-24s 1944-45. It's like Western Europe 1944-45. And I think it actually touches a little bit on the bombing of Dresden, because they were based in Cirignola, Italy. And Cirignola sounds very, it was the 12th Air Force, where everybody thinks it's the 8th Air Force, the mighty 8th, because they were stocked with like B-17s, and the B-17s like the beautiful glamorous bomber, whereas the B-24 is like this they called it the flying boxcar because that's what it looked like. But there were more B-24s built during World War II, and it could also carry a heavier payload than a B-17, but the B-17 got all the glory because it's a very beautiful airplane. In my book it is. But the B-24 is like, it's just this flying boxcar. And like I said, it lives up to the name or whatever, but George McGovern flew B-24s, and they were based out of Cirignola. And it's kind of funny, is one of the things that it mentions is that, you know, Cirignola, like, it sounds kind of familiar, even though, like, you've never been there. You've probably never even heard of it.
Yeah.
Is because that's where they got the name for Cheerios, because the type of wheat that's grown in Cirignola is a specific kind of wheat. And that's what they use to make Cheerios.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it's like one of those weird things or whatever, but like it's a great book, but it didn't like I've always been obviously interested in like airplanes, but I've also always been interested in World War II. So whenever he makes airplanes from World War II along with, like, you know, it's just one of those perfect freaking meetings for me. Like, it's like my love story basically, you know, and that book was just amazing. But like whenever you read that book, you'll find out things that just baffles you, the stuff that they went through, and gives you a whole new respect of more than what any type of movie ever could, you know, like guys, they're basically flying blind. Their lead bomber would have radar, but none of the other planes would because it was a new technology at the time.
Well, think about, we just watched First Man and how awestruck we were with the fact that they went up. I mean, how many years, 20 years of difference?
Yeah. Yeah. 1940 to 1960. So it was what, 1969, and whenever we put the first man on the moon, and then 1944-45. Yeah.
Your big slow target up there.
God, yeah. And the most dangerous thing they could do is fly in a cloud bank because they didn't know where their wingmen were. And they had to fly tucked in. Like, somebody had the great ideas, like, how do you defend against flak? Well, you fly really close together so that way whenever a flak burst hits in the middle of it or whatever, you take out three planes. Well, I guess technically that was to defend from like aerial attacks or whatever, but still, like, it's okay. It's good for aerial attacks.
But then it makes you a target
for ground attacks.
Yeah.
So
just bringing up, it just popped in my head. Have you seen that? There's this movie coming out with Sam Elliott called The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then Bigfoot.
No.
Yeah. Everybody just check out this insanity. Go look up the trailer for that, because I think I'm going to be watching this.
Yeah. I like Sam Elliott.
The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then the Bigfoot is the name of it.
I like it. I can dig it.
Oh, my God.
Speaking of which, I'm not going to talk about it here because we're we're almost an hour and 30. So like, yeah, I'm going to wrap this up. But, I sent you and Steven a article today.
I haven't had a chance to look at it, but yeah,
it's pretty interesting, man. It's pretty cool. I'll just leave it at that and we'll tease it for next week.
You want to tease a little bit more though?
Well, it's about this, Hollywood screenwriter who bought, veteran's uniform, an old World War II uniform that had a map in it. And so he goes to France and kind of investigates this map. It's kind of rewritten the whole history of the, Rangers, is it Second Rangers, I think? I'm not sure if it's, at Pointe du Hoc. I'm sure I'm butchering that because I'm not a Frenchman or French person.
Yeah.
But Pointe du Hoc is the cliffs of Pointe du Hoc. And, it's basically new light shed on what actually happened at the Battle of Pointe du Hoc, because it's kind of like pieces of it had been classified now that it's kind of really out in the open and stuff like that, that it's kind of like rewriting the history that, and apparently it's so captivating that like there's already been like two Canadian companies like over there making films, and then like apparently there's an American company making a film about it soon. So yeah, so it's pretty neat.
Okay, I'm going to follow up. I'll look into that.
Yeah.
You've answered two of my questions. Briefly touch on my third.
The comiXology.
What did you read? How did you dig it?
I'm still reading Hush.
Yeah.
Hush is really cool. It takes me a minute to get in the mood to like, cause usually during the week I'm so busy.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But like whenever I do have a moment, I'm really digging Hush. Like I was trying to figure out what to make my first book that I read on comiXology. Cause I got it. And then I was like, you know what? I'll just go ahead and sign up. It was like a month free of Unlimited. Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Cause you'd brought up that Sword Daughter and I wanted to read that. Wanted to check that out.
That's a buy. You
gotta pay for that one. I'm probably just going to go ahead and get it just because. But like I said, I was like, I'll sign up for the month free subscription. So I signed up for the month free and I've got Hush and then the Northlanders that you suggested.
Yeah. See, Northlanders and Sword Daughters by the same guy.
Yeah.
Northlanders is kind of it's a Viking story set in the Northland.
Okay.
That's very, lots of action. The Sword Daughter's a little bit more slower paced, more personal. But I highly recommend both of those. So you might want to check out Northlanders before you check out Sword Daughter, just because it's free with your subscription.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and that's what I was gonna do. I was gonna check out. I was gonna finish up Hush. I'm on chapter 3 of Hush, because that's what I've been doing. Is whenever I have time to read, I'm sitting down reading a chapter.
And you like the guided view, don't you? Because some people don't.
I really do like the guided view. I think this is going to sound stupid, because with my dyslexia, like it helps me focus on this area instead of seeing all the bubbles. Like it helps me focus on the area and then I can just tap the screen and it moves over to the next bubble.
And or if I need to go back. You can set it up to where you do the guided view and it's either before or after. You can still get that full screenshot of the thing you've read.
Yeah.
So you can get the whole impact, because sometimes a piece of art on a page, things will be tied together in a certain way.
Yeah.
But that I've got to where I like that too, because it helps me just kind of.
Yeah, it just helps you kind of jump through it. And like what I dig is if it's like a big splash page, then it'll kind of guide you through the bubbles and then it'll zoom out and let you see the entire splash page with the reading. And like I said, like I'm really digging the guided view, because it helps me focus on the one thing at a time. Somehow with being dyslexic, that really, really, really helps me out instead of trying to like pick and choose my way through it or whatever.
So thank you, comiXology.
Yeah, definitely.
For doing that.
And just because, like, since we were talking about Northlanders and Sword Daughter, I just want to bring this up real fast. I think it was like this past Monday, there was a 14th century Viking sword found. Just somebody had some sewage problems and they came in to dig up the sewage problems and they found
two swords in the last year. The one was a girl that pulled it out of the lake. And then this.
Yeah.
They're going to find a sword around here.
Found 1100 year old Norwegian, in Norway. Northern Jutland Historical Museum archaeologists said the layer of the soil of which the sword was found dates to the 1300s. The sword was discovered on Algade, A-L-G-A-D-E, which I know I'm butchering that because I can't speak Nordic or Norwegian.
Yeah.
Either. Which is one of Aalborg's oldest streets. So it was discovered in Aalborg, Norway. But yeah, just, yeah. This plumber found a sword in this because somebody had issues. Like, that's crazy. Yeah. That is crazy.
Makes me want to go back to Galveston and find a pirate sword.
Yeah, something like that. That'd be awesome.
Gold.
I really wanted to, like, it was way too cold this weekend, but I was like, I'm wanting to get out and go walk around the property and go do the freaking spearhead hunting, man.
Well, after the, we were hit end on recording, there's something I can tell you.
Oh, okay, cool. Here
pretty soon.
Well, if that's the case, we'll go ahead and start wrapping it up. You guys have heard us talk a lot about Audible today. So guess what?
It's because we love it.
And you'll love it too. So go by www.nerdylegion.com/audible. Sign up. Get your 2 weeks free and two books. And the offer's probably changed. It might be a month and it might be $4. It might be $2. It might be $1. But go by, sign up, get your free books. If you don't like it, you don't have to keep the subscription. If you do like it and you're gonna get a free credit every month to get whatever book you want.
It's got its claws in me so deeply that before we came in here, there was an Audible commercial that came on and it's made me like, maybe I should go see if they got a sale going on.
I know it,
maybe,
right?
I should spend the money for extra credits.
Yeah, exactly. The 3 credits for like $30 is awful tempting. But if you like the show, help us grow, go by and rate us and write a review. Just remember, please be kind. We like five stars,
please.
Audible, we already covered Audible. Hey, if you want to talk to us between shows, if you want to tell us how bad we're doing, or you want to tell us how awesome we're doing, if you want to tell us...
If you love cats and really want to put us in our place.
Yeah, or if you liked Vonnegut a lot, or if you hate Vonnegut and think he's the worst person in the world and Gaiman can't write himself out of a paper bag or something like that, drop us a line. You can email us at the number 2btshow@gmail.com. That's 2btshow@gmail.com. Or you can get a hold of us on Twitter. That's the same thing. The number 2BT show. That's the number 2BT show. I think that's going to do it for us.
With that being said,
I'm David.
I'm Michael.
2BT. Signing out.
Adios.
Vaya con Dios. So it goes.
So it goes.
That wasn't terrible.
That was pathetic. Boom.
Nerdy Legion.
Nerdylegion.com.